Welcome to the Detroit Lions News Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Chap, and today we're going to be talking about the Detroit Lions because I think a lot of people, when they watched the draft or when they were counting down the draft, a lot of people got magnified by the mock drafts. And usually when it comes down to things, the mock draft really doesn't hold any weight. Because when we got to the draft, I don't think anybody said that Terrion Arnold was going to fall to Detroit. I think Ennis Rakestraw, who was their second-round pick, I don't think people thought that he would be there in the second round. And that's just the way that the draft goes sometimes. But I thought this draft really showcased Detroit as a credible franchise. And, you know, it started with the Sewell contract extension, which he was the highest-paid offensive lineman. And St. Brown becoming the highest-paid wide receiver for a short period of time. But in that time, the Detroit Lions really made themselves known. They really made themselves known. And when draft day came, they made the most of their opportunities. When you think about it like this, guys, Detroit came into this draft with the 29th pick. Okay, there's a very, very distinct chance at 29 you're going to be getting a second-round talent. It usually doesn't work the way that it worked with the Detroit Lions because very rarely do you get a player like Terrion Arnold, who was a number one corner for a lot of people, including the Daniel Jeremiah, including the Dane Brugglers, and including Matt Miller. I mean, I know Kuiper had his own. I think he was a third cornerback on his draft board, which was asinine because he liked Kool-Aid more than Terrion Arnold, which didn't make sense to me. But if you think about it from the pragmatic approach that Brad Holmes took, it was a fantastic way to kind of get himself reacclimated to the way that they do things. And, I didn't think that they were going to trade. I thought if, you know, it gets to them, they're going to trade down. That's what I originally thought. And then when Terrion Arnold kept dropping and the first 15 players were offensive players, I think you took a look at it and go, okay, someone's going to fall to you. Do you trade up? And when do you trade up? And are you willing to give up the capital to trade up and get that player? And, you know, moving in front of the Packers was a smooth move because everyone knows that the Packers were going to take Terrion Arnold. And look, it couldn't have gotten any better. And when you think about it in the approach that I'm going to think about it, you basically got two starting quarterbacks for third round picks. And then one was a second round pick. Like if you think about, you know, trading for Carlton Davis and then, trading to move up to get Terrion Arnold. Like you moved up to these guys, you moved up to get Terrion Arnold and you gave him a third round pick. Does that third round pick mean anything? I mean, if Terrion Arnold is good, that third round pick isn't going to mean nothing. Because in the grand scheme of things, Terrion Arnold might be the better player, and it really could even out what you could have gotten in the third round. Now, a third-round pick could be a really great player. It could. It could also be a guy like, you know, maybe an Ifeatu Melifonwu, where it takes some time for him to develop. And we're going to get to the player that they're going to have to wait to develop. But all in all, like, the way that this draft class stood up for Detroit, it was well beyond my dreams of the way that they got things done. Like, if we're going to be honest with each other, I didn't think that Detroit Lions would be getting the players that they got, where they got them. And that's where we're going to get to. You know, when you look at this draft class, so let's look at it right now. This is the full class. In the first round with the 24th pick, you traded up to get Terrion Arnold from cornerback from Alabama. Ennis Rakestraw Jr., the cornerback from Missouri, you got him at pick 61. Pick 126 in the fourth round, you got Giovanni Manu from British Columbia, and I got some pretty good intel about him. Again, I'm not going to come on here and bullshit you, okay? There's no way and no how that I'm going to really know what this kid is about because I don't watch college football in the British Columbia. I don't watch CFL. So when I want to talk about the CFL, when I want to talk about some of these things, I want to know what I'm talking about. That's what I want to do. With the 132 132nd pick in the fourth round. They took safety Sione Vaki, which is this is probably the most interesting pick of the whole draft because he could play two positions, running back and safety. He was good at both. We're gonna profile him as well as everyone on this list that you see right here. And then Mekhi Wingo, 189th, sixth round. Great value there. We're going to get to him too. And Christian Mahogany from Boston College, the guard, was drafted 210 in the sixth round. So, all in all, the Lions got a lot of value for their draft picks. Like, you got like Mahogany, I didn't think it was going to be available in the sixth round. I just didn't. Wingo, I thought he'd be gone in the third or fourth round. But they were there for you in the sixth round. And, you know, there's some people talking about Mahogany. They're talking about Wingo as guys that could help you moving down the line. But let's get to some of these things. Like, we'll get to those in a minute. But, you know, looking at the full draft class, I think that this draft class really personified what Brad Holmes is about. You know, listen, drafting two cornerbacks in a row, it's not something that you usually do. It's not even something that you would do on a positional value type thing. It's not even something that you would do it for need, because I don't think there was a need for two corners. Now you can make the case for there could be a case for, you know, drafting two corners, because what if one busts out? What if one's great? You never know the case. But if it's best player available and Rakestraw and Arnold are the best corners and they become something in the NFL, like if Arnold becomes a legitimate CB1, you're not going to say nothing about that third round pick that you gave up. And Rakestraw, if Rakestraw turns into a fantastic player, you're not going to say nothing about drafting another cornerback after a cornerback. In this league, with the passing, and especially with Detroit last year, you know, the secondary was a big issue. They were giving up yards to Nick Mullins and Justin Fields and Jordan Love. And now that you look at the whole NFC North, you go, wow. It's gotten a little bit better. I mean, Caleb Williams is going to be a rookie. He could be good. I do like that pick of Rome Odunze for the Bears. So, obviously, J.J. McCarthy going to the Minnesota Vikings. Jordan Love is going to have another year in their system. You know, the NFC North isn't getting any easier, and the quarterbacks are getting tougher. So, if you're Brad Holmes, load up on those corners, and maybe you can figure out why, if your pass rush can get a pass rush, because I felt last year that, you know, they can get the ball quick because they were getting beat early in the routes. That's what I felt like. With the cornerback position, I felt like, you know, Sutton, he was on an island. They kind of had to leave him on an island. But if the quarterback has a hold on to the ball because the corners are really, you know, on their guy, and they're not leaving him any room to, you know, make a quick pass, or if they can't see the guy open from, you know, the start. Sometimes that can create pass rush, and this is where it all works in unison. And I was one of the guys that wanted them to draft a defensive end, but when you see how they took the secondary as a huge priority, and we know Brad Holmes has a specific kind of idea of what he wants his ideal cornerback to be. When you look at that, you go, okay, he's doing a fine job, and this the way that he's building this roster, I think he has more faith in guys like Pascal and James Houston and Hutch to get better, and that's what's going to happen. I mean, look, this draft class, you'll never hear me say give him a grade until 3 years after, because if we would have took a draft class and we would have done it the day after, we wouldn't have known about Derek Barnes. We wouldn't have known about Ifeatu Melifonwu. We wouldn't have known about Amon-Ra St. Brown. That was a draft class a few years back, 3 years back. And as we look at this draft class, I see a lot of potential. I see a lot of, you know, a really good potential with this draft class. I think you potentially have guys like Vaki who could be, you know, if he's one of the things that Vaki can do is he's a playmaker. You know, I seen him play running back at Utah. And one of the things I was kind of perplexed about is, you know, he's a safety, but he's really electric with when he has a ball. And with the new kick return rules, like, you want players like that to have the ball. You know, I think that's one of the major things. Like, you know, Cooper DeJean that went to Philadelphia, I'm pretty sure that Philadelphia had the same thing in mind with Cooper DeJean, because he is a fantastic returner. He is athletic. He can make the plays. He can be elusive. And that's what you want from your players. And this new kick return rules, it's kind of going to change some things in the way that teams draft, develop, put their best players at the kick return position. That's going to be part of it. But when I look at this class, I think there's a lot of potential. I think there's a lot of things that could be really, really good. And it's a credit to Brad Holmes, because he really thought about it in the sense that, you know, he wasn't going to take any shortcuts. He wasn't going to make some broad proclamation. You know, he wasn't going to make some, you know, off the wall pick. I think last year should have really told people that what Brad Holmes does in the draft, it usually pans out. And, you know, when you think about adding these players to another rookie class that was good, you know, Brad Holmes is really building a good football team in Detroit. And I can't be more excited for this team, because I really feel like Terrion Arnold is the best corner in the draft. I really feel like Ennis Rakestraw, the cornerback from Missouri, is going to be a damn good corner in this league. I do feel like Mahogany could be a starter in this league. I do feel like early on, maybe Wingo could be that rotational pass rusher that we all thought Levi Onwuzurike was going to be. But all in all, I think that what Brad Holmes did was he just inserted more talent onto this roster. And we always know that he's got this kind of good grip on the UDFA market. There's a couple guys I'm going to highlight at the end of the podcast that you could look forward to. But every year, a UDFA makes its way on the roster. It's going to be tough for this time around because the talent is better on the roster. But there's usually one or two. And I got a sense of who could be that one or two that make the roster. But we'll get to that in the later part of the podcast. But it was a great time for Detroit. And, you know, especially the Lions, the way that they drafted. And for the city looked great. The city pulled it off. They broke the record for the largest attendance at an NFL draft. It just shows you that this fan base is one of the best fan bases in football. They are one of the best fan bases in football. And I think a lot of people over the course of years, if you're 34, you're in your 30s, your 40s, you kind of dismiss Detroit as like, oh, they're just Detroit. But I think when you watched that, you said, okay, this is a sleeping giant in Detroit. And if the Lions could really build off what they did last year, going to the NFC Championship game, winning two playoff games, I think they could be a legitimate threat to go to the Super Bowl this year in New Orleans. And we're going to see what Brad Holmes, if his picks actually help this team, which his track record shows that, yes, his picks will absolutely help the roster. How much? In a couple years, what are we going to look at this draft class as? Is it going to be the draft class that puts Detroit over the top? Or will it be the draft class that sets the team back? There's two ways it can go. Two ways, and that's the only way. But I thought the Detroit Lions did a damn good job at building the roster, doing a damn good job, and they did really, really well. And hats off to Brad Holmes. Again, this guy, he does it the right way. You know, he could have got aggressive in free agency and try to pigeonhole his mistakes. But we know that when you pay people in free agency, oftentimes it comes back to haunt you because you're not able to pay your players. You're not able to, pay your homegrown talent or you're not able to make that trade deadline acquisition. Those are some of the things that happen. So I like what Brad Holmes is doing. I think it's the right approach. It's a patient approach, but it's ultimately the right approach. And I think that Brad Holmes is doing a damn good job. All right, in the next segment of the podcast, the Detroit Lions News podcast, we're gonna break down all the picks that they made. And then on the later half of the podcast, we got free agents that are there. We got some undrafted free agents that I think that could make the roster potentially. And then we'll be off. And obviously this is like the last, you know, real podcast. We're going to do some podcasts over the summer, you know, breaking down some Lions football. We got the schedule release coming in May. It's going to be a good time for Detroit, but let's get to this draft class. Let's look at the draft class and let's see what happens. This is a good team and what a great draft it was for the Detroit Lions. But this, we're going to get to all the picks in the next segment. We're going to break down picks. We got some people that are really qualified opinions that have their own opinions. We're going to get to their comments next, and we will see you in the next segment. Welcome back to Detroit Lions News Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Chapp. And today, obviously, in the last segment, we previewed what we're going to get to right now. Let's get to it. So with the first pick, they picked Terrion Arnold. And I thought the Terrion Arnold pick, I felt like he was one of the best corners in the draft next to Quinion Mitchell. I did like Quinion Mitchell. I think one and two, they're both one and two. I didn't think that Terrion Arnold was a third quarterback corner on the board. I thought he was like the first or second. And when you read what Pro Football Focus has to say, overall they had him at 14th. They had him the third ranked in the position. They said Detroit trades up to acquire the 14th ranked player on the Pro Football Focus big board, and Alabama cornerback Terrion Arnold, who has an alpha presence in the secondary and plays with a fearless mentality. He led all SEC cornerbacks in interceptions and pass breakups in 2023. He also led the conference with a 90.6 PFF run defense grade. Detroit has officially overhauled its cornerback room with the additions of Arnold, Carlton Davis, and Amik Robertson. Goes on to say Detroit, that's the second part of it right there. But they graded the pick as an elite pick. I did like the pick. I thought it was really well orchestrated. And I just think that they did a damn good job of picking. You know, they did a damn good job picking Arnold and trading up to get him. And like I said before, I don't really care about the third round pick. The third round pick is moot, because if Aaron Glenn gets a job next year, you're going to get a compensatory pick in the third round. There is potentially you can get more compensatory picks. I'm not really worried about the third round pick. If Terrion Arnold is a guy that can help you, you're not going to be worried about this pick at all. Actually, you're probably going to be like, I'll give the third round pick for a number one corner any day. And Brett Holmes did that. Brett Holmes has done it twice in this offseason. He traded for Carlton Davis and gave up a third round pick. He traded up to get Terrion Arnold. He gave up a third round pick. And when you think about it, you dropped four spots. You dropped a couple spots in the first round, and you gave a third round pick to get a number one corner. I don't see the issue with that. And if you see the issue with that, I'm curious to wonder what's your position on that. Because I feel like if you're going about it the right way and you're thinking about it the right way, Terrion Arnold was one of the better picks. And I thought it was interesting because, you know, Brugler had a great piece on Terrion Arnold. You know, Brugler ranked the Lions third in NFL draft with the players that they picked. His favorite pick was Terrion Arnold, cornerback, Alabama. He was number 10 on his board. Arnold was my highest graded defensive player in the entire draft, and the Lions were able to get him at 24. Aside from the talent he brings to the roster, the fit is what makes this one of my favorite picks. Arnold is one of the most competitive players in the draft class. He's ideally wired not just for a cornerback, but especially a Dan Campbell coach cornerback. Very interesting what Dane Brugler said in that little piece. That little at the end of it. A Dan Campbell cornerback. Because I think that not only is it a Dan Campbell type cornerback, but it's an Aaron Glenn type cornerback. Because if you look at the way that this Detroit Lions team has kept corners, you know, they've kept corners that are, you know, I felt like Jeff Okuda was a good corner, but he wasn't mentally, you know, strong enough to be a corner on this roster. I feel like they kept a lot of guys on this roster that were more mentally prepared for the position. You know, when you're playing, if you're in any sport, if you're a pitcher, you're going to let up home runs. You're going to let up hits. You're going to walk the batter. If you're a goalie in hockey, you're going to give up goals. Like, it's just the way it is. If you're a quarterback, you're going to throw interceptions. And if you're a corner back in football, you're at a little bit of a disadvantage. You can't get as handsy as you used to be able to get handsy. And you're not able to able to do some of the things that you want to do. And you've got to be mentally prepared to be in that position, because if you're not, 9 out of 10 times these corners will falter because of their own psyche. You know, I feel like a lot of corners that are really talented corners, the reason that they fall in the draft, the reason that they fall if they fail in the NFL, is because they're not mentally, you know, they're not mentally strong. When things go wrong, they kind of get in their own heads. And, you know, if you've ever played those positions in any of those sports, you know, once you get in your head, it's over. You're done. You're not going to come back from that. And I feel like Aaron Glenn and Dan Campbell, that's what they like about these corners. And I feel like with Amik Robertson, his attitude, you know, Terron Arnold, his attitude, Rakestraw, his attitude, Carlton Davis, his attitude, they all have the same mindset. Like, they're going to be the best player that they could be, and that's what you want out of a corner. You don't want a corner that's going to question himself if he reads the wrong route and gets burnt. You want him to come out the next time and not allow that play to happen again. That's what a mentally strong corner does. Now, I thought some ESPN analysts had some really key things about Arnold that I really want to get to. Jordan Reed said, well, they asked, what was the best value pick in round one? He said Terron Arnold, cornerback to the Lions at number 24. Getting the top-ranked quarterback corner on my board at number 24 was a huge deal for Detroit. For the second consecutive year, an Alabama defensive back somehow fell to the Lions. Last year, GM Brett Holmes was aggressive in adding Brian Branch, who fell further than expected, which ended up really, really great. The secondary of Aaron Glenn's defense was a clear weak point on the roster, but the Lions have attacked that shortcoming this offseason. Arnold, who had 5 interceptions last season, will be an immediate starter opposite Carlton Davis. And Matt Miller, who is a fantastic draft analyst, he said, Miller said, Terron Arnold, the Lions can get, they were asking, can you make your early call for defensive rookie of the year? He says, Lions can get after the quarterback and create opportunities for the defense backs to make plays. Arnold will reap the benefits of the pass rush with his ball hawking skills that allowed him to grab 5 interceptions at Alabama last season. Kind of stumbled over my words a little bit, but you read those two different opinions on Terron Arnold, and you look at, you know, a guy, you know, like Terron Arnold, who could be the early defensive player, the rookie of the year. I mean, that would be fantastic. And I think that Terron Arnold is really going to put together a really good rookie campaign. And I think that I think the pass rush is going to be better. And, you know, with DJ Reader added to the ilk, I think that they're going to be a lot better. And it's going to help out, you know, a guy like Terron Arnold, who's a rookie. And it's going to help that he has a veteran on the other side. And they're probably going to have Amik Robertson out there at some point. But this secondary has been totally rehauled. And I think that, you know, a guy like Terron Arnold, I think he's going to do really well in this system. And it's credit to Brett Holmes just to trade up and get the guy. Because, look, you could have sat back and said, no, we'll get him. We'll wait till, you know, 29 and wait for the best player to come to us. A lot of times, guys, it just doesn't work that way. And I wish it did, but, you know, a lot of times it just don't work that way. So glad that Brent Holmes traded up to get Terron Arnold, and I thought it was a really good pick. Now, let's go to Ennis Rakestraw. Ennis Rakestraw was the second round pick. So, Pro Football Focus grades this as a very good pick. He was picked at pick 61. His overall ranking was 46. He was seventh on the cornerback board. They say about Ennis Rakestraw on Pro Football Focus, they say the Lions continue to rebuild a defense that would rank 30th in coverage grade in 2023. Rakestraw, the 46th ranked player on the PFF big board, is a physical cornerback who excels in zone coverage. He posted an 85.2 PFF zone coverage grade in 2023. The Lions completely revamped their cornerback room in just one offseason. And I thought that was very interesting because if you think about the way that they have, you know, revamped their cornerback room, they've done a damn good job about making this a better cornerback room. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, Brett Holmes did double down on the cornerback position because if you think about it like this, he really hasn't done that in all the time that he's been here. Just hasn't. And I thought that, you know, Ennis Rakestraw has a unique ability because he's a he's a more physical corner than Terrion Arnold. I think that's a good 1A, 1B kind of situation where if Rakestraw really develops into the cornerback that you think he's going to become, what Brett Holmes thinks he's going to become, you could potentially got your two cornerbacks of the future on rookie deals going into a Super Bowl window. Very, very smart. Because we see how much cornerbacks go for. I mean, L'Jarius Sneed went for $20 million in a third-round pick. And for people who say, you know, that's not a lot, it's a lot because, look, L'Jarius Sneed could be great in Kansas City, and he can go to you and be absolute ass. So that's one of the reasons that you kind of you don't want to overpay for corners. You don't want to overpay for guys that, you know, you're not fully confident in it, confident in their abilities. Maybe, you know, maybe you're a general manager and you think, okay, L'Jarius Sneed, guy like L'Jarius Sneed, maybe he was the defense helped him out. Maybe that aggressive blitzing defense helped him out and it allowed him to make some, you know, some key plays. Obviously, when you know that your defense is going to get home more often than not, you're going to take some more risk. And I think if you're in another defense where you don't take risk, maybe you're left out to dry and maybe you get exploited a little bit. That's what I look at with L'Jarius Sneed when, you know, a lot of people are clamoring that they should have signed him. You know, you get a guy in Ennis Rakestraw who I think is one of the better corners in this draft. And, you know, even Pro Football Focus says that it's a very good pick and it was the seventh cornerback on the board. But this was a fantastic draft. You know, this was a fantastic pick for Brett Hall because you're getting a guy who you're getting a guy who potentially was, you know, if you follow mock drafts, he was mocked to Detroit later in the process as a first round pick. You got him in the second round. This is the second year in a row that Brett Holmes says, this is the second year in a row that Brett Holmes has had a good player fall to him in the second round, you know, and Brian Branch worked out pretty well. So, you know, luckily, Rakestraw doesn't have to step in and contribute right away. That's not what he's here to do. I mean, he can, I'm sure he can, but at the same time, I'm sure they want to develop him, grow him. And thankfully, Carlton Davis is ahead of him. Amik Robertson is ahead of him. You assume Terrion Arnold will be there. Brian Branch will be in the slot. It's a good situation for a young corner because they can really develop and grow. They don't have to, you know, press them into duty. And I thought that was a very, very key, optic. You know, obviously with Rakestraw, he's a physical guy. And with physical cornerbacks in this NFL, you worry about two things. You worry about him getting too handsy, and you worry about his coverage in man. You know, his coverage in man coverage wasn't the best. But if you can work with him and you're allowed to work with him, this could be a huge help to the Detroit Lions, especially if there's injuries that come about in the later half of the season. This could really help this Detroit Lions team later in the season and moving forward in the future. And I always tell people through the draft classes that, you know, you have drafting is not just for the present. It's for the future, too. So when you get draft a guy like Rakestraw, it's not just for this year. It's for the next year, the year after, the year after. And once you do that, you're going to be in a good situation. Let's get to the we got obviously got at the they had no third-round pick. They traded them. So at the third pick for the Detroit Lions in the fourth round at 126, they drafted Giovanni Manu, the offensive tackle from British Columbia. PFF didn't have a grade on him. They don't have him at overall. They didn't even have him on the board. And a lot of people they would question this pick. They would question why they picked this guy at where they picked him. And as you read kind of, as you read that PFF thing, they don't know who the hell he is, basically. And I thought it was interesting because of the way that they put it together. But I was fascinated because one of the people that did know about Giovanni Manu was Field Yates. Field Yates of ESPN, he wrote this in an article today. I'm going to pull it up right now. He puts... he said it wasn't easy to track down film of Manu. He played for the University of British Columbia, UofBC. It was more of a basketball player growing up, but once in hand, that tape didn't take long to impress. Manu had some most impressive measurements in the draft. He was measured at 6'7", 352 pounds as regional pro day in late March. There he had a 33.5-inch vertical jump and ran over 5.0 in the 40. He showed devastating strength on tape that I believe will travel to the NFL level. Very interesting what Field Yates is saying, because I did my own homework. I went and asked a CFL general manager about Mr. Manu. And this is what he said. He said, I think every CFL GM said, please don't make too much noise. He's got a lot of attention from NFL teams. He's a fantastic player. I said to my scouting staff that the two ideal places where he could reach his full potential in the NFL were Detroit or Philly. No slight to the other teams, but both of those teams can take time to develop his skill set. He can grow and mature with the tackles in those two organizations. And the GMs are forward thinkers. The Lions offensive line was one of the best in the NFL. Great coaching is what he will need to succeed, and he will get that in Detroit. Can he step in right away for a game or two? But his biggest priority is to learn. He's an athlete. It's all about learning. That's it. If any other team takes him besides those two, I wonder if he'll succeed. He will in Detroit. I compare him to Jordan Mailata of the Eagles. Let him learn. Watch him grow. He comes from a good program with the same mentality as Detroit has. It's very interesting what that general manager said, because, you know, when you think about some of the things that these general managers do say, and you think about, you know, a guy who would know more about the college game in the Canadian circuit than anybody, and that's a CFL general manager. And basically the way that he was implying it was that that Giovanni Manu, a lot of the CFL people were hoping that he wouldn't make a lot of noise. He went to that regional pro day. He obviously made a lot of noise. And, you know, these CFL general managers, one of the things they want to do is they have preferences of where these kids can go that play in Canada. You know, they're just not looking out for their league. They're looking out for the game in Canada, because they really want the game in Canada to grow. And if there's bust after bust after bust coming out of Canada, well, then it kind of limits teams really taking a chance on a kid from Canada. But basically what it came down to was this general manager thought that the only two teams that could take Manu and that he would develop into a really good defense, a really good offensive tackle was Detroit or Philadelphia. And he said, yeah, he can play guard a little bit, but he's going to be a tackle. And when you look forward into this, into the future with this team, there could be a chance that Taylor Decker is not on the team anymore. And can Manu step in? And if Manu is able to step in and he's able to be slided to the right tackle position, you put Sewell on the left tackle position, you don't lose much. You know, if Manu just plays a little bit better than Decker did last year, which Decker was phenomenal with a broken foot, again, with a guy like Hank Fraley as your offensive line coach, you should be really, really happy about this one, because you have the coach who can really develop his mindset. You know, this is the same coaching staff who developed Coyote Oshika. I'm sure they're gonna grow and develop Cody Sorensdahl. You know, this is a good, this offensive line coach, this group, they developed talent. Like Coyote Ashika, I remember when I didn't know who the hell he was. But, you know, when he went in against that Buffalo game and he played at Oliver, he didn't look out of place. And that's a credit to Hank Fraley, the offensive line coach. It's also a credit to Brad Holmes for making that push. It's also, you know, the whole coaching staff gets kudos on that kid being ready to play. So I thought that was interesting what they said about Giovanni Manu. Giovanni Manu is a hell of a player, and I think that he's going to be really good. Field Yates, it was interesting because I haven't heard many national guys break down Giovanni Manu because they didn't really know who he was. I thought it was a little bit disingenuous that there was a lot of national people who were, you know, judging the pick, and they didn't even know. They didn't even do the research. They kind of like, you know, back-channeled and kind of did some, you know, ordinary digging. They thought it was a reach. Reaches don't really matter. If you go through the whole draft, there's a lot of reaches. There's a lot of people that slide that you didn't think were going to slide. And one of those players is the player we're going to talk about. You know, if we go to the next pick, Sione Vaikai. And we're going to read what Vaikai, they say about it on Pro Football Focus. Lions fans, get ready to love Vaikai, one of the most athletic players in the 2024 draft. They say he played safety and running back at Utah, but he is a solid safety in coverage. Don't expect him to make exceptional plays in the football very often. But Vaikai packs a mean punch. He's a plus tackler and run defense and fits perfectly in Aaron Glenn's mentality in the Motor City. What I really thought was funny about this was Scotty Montgomery, the Detroit Lions running back coach, met with Vaikai, and they think of him more as a running back compared to a safety, which is interesting. I think it's very interesting. I think it's kind of forward-thinking, and if you watched him last year against USC, he did some damn good things. I think he ran for 66 yards, had a couple receptions. I think he had a touchdown, too. But this Vaikai kid, with the new kick return rules, like I said earlier, I think he can really excel. And, you know, you look at some of these guys that excel really, really well in the draft, they have an athletic profile. And if you do need to put him at safety, he could play safety too. This is one of your kind of jagged edge kind of Swiss Army knives that you can deploy at any given time. Very smart, proactive thinking by Brad Holmes, because not only do you have one position, you have two positions that you could potentially deploy him at, and you don't have to really worry about where he's going. And you could say, let's say the safeties have, you know, an injury breakout. He can go play safety and he could hold his own. Running backs, they need another running back. He can play running back. In terms of the flexibility that it details, when you have the flexibility of a guy who can play two different positions on both sides of the ball, what it does is it takes a roster spot away from another player. And what it does is it opens up a roster spot for another player. That's why I think this Vaki thing is a little bit glossed over, because it allows you to have a lot of roster flexibility in terms of the way that you build your team and the way Brad Holmes builds his team. Maybe this opens up a spot for a wide receiver in free agency or an edge player or something along those lines. This singular move, a guy who can play both positions, it could be very, very huge for the Detroit Lions team when it comes down to the roster construction and how they're going to construct the roster. I thought it was very interesting what they were saying. You know, when you talk about Vaki, very athletic. Like I said, very athletic. And this is a very good, flexible army knife that you're allowed to deploy. And I thought it was very, very fitting that Brad Holmes, as soon as you heard that they were kind of interviewing him more as a running back, like I said, it allows you to go into August and have a clear open mind that this guy might take up two spots on the roster with one singular person. So it opens up another roster spot for another player at another position. That's the key thing right there. So it's interesting what, you know, some of these things go. Obviously, the next one is Makai Wingo. Now, this is a guy I really want to talk about because Makai Wingo wasn't supposed to fall this far. On the PFF draft board, he was ranked 131. He was ninth in his position, which is pretty phenomenal. You got him in the sixth round. They say, on Pro Football Focus, they say this is a great spot to get Wingo, a good athlete for someone his size. His 84.9 run defense grade since 2022 is best among SEC defensive tackles in that span. And it wouldn't be a shock to see him develop into a good rotational player in Detroit. Look, when you get this late in the draft, you got to take chances. You got to take chances. If you can take chances, you're going to be very, very good. And I think a guy like Wingo is going to give you the opportunity. You know, maybe if you can't re-sign a guy like Ali McNeil, maybe this is a guy that helps you out, you know, moving forward. Obviously, you're going to sign someone else, but you never know what defensive tackles can really fetch. You know, a guy like Christian Wilkins, he got a record contract, and I didn't think Christian Wilkins was that great, to be honest. But when you look at Wingo, when you look at some of what people are saying, this is from Matt Miller of ESPN. He said, what was the best value pick in round six? And Miller said, Makai Wingo, defense tackle to the Detroit Lions. He went nearly 100 spots later than my ranking for him, number 94. So this is a top 100 player, according to Matt Miller. But he has a chance to make an immediate impact in Detroit, playing in the Lions' four-man front. Wingo has a similar style to that current Detroit defensive tackle, Ali McNeil. Wingo's short and stout at 6 feet tall and 284 pounds, but his effort level is fantastic. He is one of the biggest steals of the third day. When you think about getting a 100-ranked player in the sixth round, that's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. And kudos to Brad Holmes because, I mean, obviously the draft board had to fall his way, but to be honest, I mean, the way that you kind of propel this thing is you're hoping that a guy like that falls to you. And he did. And for Matt Miller to rank him inside of his top 100, it says an awful lot about him. And the PFF grade, it shows that he's a really good player. You know, I really don't take PFF grades into total account, but I think that this is a guy, when you turn on the tape of LSU, you see Makai Wingo and you see him making an impact. You see him, you know, pushing the pocket. You see him doing all this, and it's great. It's great to see. And I love what you see from this guy. And getting him at the position that they got him at in the sixth round is fantastic. I mean, you can look at it two ways. You know, there's a lot of good players that fall to you in the sixth round, seventh round, fifth round. Maybe you got lucky again. You know, Derek Barnes has been great for you. Amon-Ra St. Brown has been great for the Lions too. Brett Holmes has had a lot of good players that he's been able to get immediate impact from. And even if Wingo doesn't, you know, he doesn't give you immediate impact, future impact, I think that's a foregone conclusion. I think that, you know, Wingo is going to be a damn good player moving forward. And I think that Detroit is going to be in a good position to make the most of Wingo's opportunities. And that's what I think with Wingo. And let's get to the next person, because I think the next person is another guy who could potentially be a steal. It's Christian Mahogany. Now, Christian Mahogany was ranked the 106th player on the Pro Football Focus board. He was ranked the fourth best guard. They graded his pick as very good. And they said this: Mahogany fell further than expected, enabling the Lions to land a bit of a steal here in the sixth round. Over the past three seasons, he has allowed just one sack and seven total quarterback pressures from 711 pass blocking snaps. If you look at his Pro Football Focus grading card, you know, you could see that he does really good against pretty much everything. He's a total steal. If you want to say it like that, just a total. It's amazing to me. It really is. It's amazing to me that they got him at the position that they got him at. Because when I think about Mahogany, I thought he was going to go in the second round, you know, something like that. But Brugler, he had something at SEMO too. So he put a day three pick who could surprise. He said Christian Mahogany, the guard from Boston College. The Lions had a fascinating day three, including trading a 2025 third-round pick to draft Giovanni Manu, a project left tackle with rare tools, but it was Detroit's two sixth-round picks that stood out. He again mentions this Brugler. He mentions LSU's Mekhi Wingo and Mahogany, who both ranked inside his top 100 too. So Matt Miller and Dane Brugler both ranked Wingo in the top 100, and he also ranked Mahogany in the top 100. Some medical questions caused Mahogany to fall, but he is a smash-mouth power blocker with lighter feet than expected. It wouldn't be a surprise to see if he was competing for a starting role in 2025. And when you talk about, you know, Mahogany, and you talk about this guard group, you know, Kevin Zeitler, he's not a spring chicken. He's got some. He's a little bit older in the tooth, so you're gonna have to replace him at some point. And if a guy like Mahogany develops and becomes that guy that could step in, win-win. This was a great draft pick. Obviously, guard was on the board for a lot of people. I think if you're, you know, a Lions fan, you were thinking, okay, Cooper Beebe in the second round. Maybe you were thinking, you know, Jackson Powers Johnson in the first round. Maybe a guard in the fifth round. I don't think anybody really expected Mahogany to be there in a sixth round, and there he was. This is just, once again, Brad Holmes doing what he does best. He took a player that was very, I think a lot of teams will end up missing on. I love Mahogany. I watched a couple of his games at BC, and I think that he's a really good player. I think he really gels right with this team. He gels right with the way that they want to run the ball. He gels right with the way that he, you know, his athletic ability. Obviously, he has some medical questions, and no one's denying that. But when you think about it, it's a damn good pick by Brad Holmes. A damn good pick. And Mahogany is going to be a damn good player for Detroit. And that's all you could ask for. You know, like I said, Christian Zeitler is getting older. I think he's 34. And then you got Graham Glasgow, who, you know, he's just signed a new deal, but you're going to have to replace him in a couple years. I mean, it's just the way it goes, you know, older in tooth, and they don't want to subject themselves any to that. But I thought it was very, very good to get a guard in this draft, because I do feel like, you know, centers, we don't know the future of Frank Ragnow, but we do know that, you know, Frank Ragnow has been mulling over retirement. And I feel like if you're able to get a guard, that way you can focus all your attention on a center next offseason, if Frank Ragnow decided to hang it up. But that was the Lions draft class, and like I said, this was a fantastic draft class for the Detroit Lions. I was so impressed with the way that they drafted. I was impressed by the positional value. I look at Wingo. I look at Mahogany. Those are two guys that I really liked. I thought you can get in the second or third round. You got him in the sixth round. I do like the potential of Giovanni Manu after I talk to people who actually know what they're talking about. They're not just guessing. And I look at Avaikai Vaki as a guy who could, you know, potentially take up a roster spot for two players. And it could open a roster spot up for someone else. And it's very forward thinking about from Brad Holmes. And all in all, like, I don't give draft grades out. I refuse to give draft grades out. because I feel like you can't grade a draft until maybe until year three. Because we could obviously see that's the case with Ifeatu Melifambu, who really gelled in his third year. You started to see, you know, Jameson Williams get better in his second year. It's just the way the positions go. And that's the way it has to happen in the NFL. Gotta give these kids time to develop. Obviously, with the way that Brett Helm is drafted, you expect a couple of these guys to make an impact. But all in all, looking forward, I think there's a lot of players on this draft class that could really help the Detroit Lions into the future. Not just this year, but into the future. And that's what the main goal of drafting is about. It's not about the present moment. Obviously, you want players to help you in the present moment, but you also want long-term impact. And that's the main reason why you go to the draft with the clear and concise mindset. Why a lot of other teams have these, you know, we're going to draft the best available player. We're going to draft this player. We're going to draft for need. If you're drafting for need, you're going to really end up ruining your own team. You're going to end up being like Matt Millen. You're going to end up being like Bob Quinn. And that's just not a way to be. Now, next on the Detroit Lions News podcast, before we wrap up the podcast, we're going to talk about the free agents that are left on. That are left in free agency and they're available to get. We'll talk about that on Detroit Lions News podcast. That's coming up next. So we talked about the draft. We got all that situated. Obviously, you go into the season. Obviously, the schedule will be released in May. You're gonna get that. There's gonna be a lot of things happening in the next month that are gonna, you know, determine the future. Obviously, the schedule release, but you also got, you know, the free agents that are still available. These are the free agents that are still available, and obviously, you could read these on the YouTube. But there is at quarterback, there's Ryan Tannehill, running back Josh Kelly. Wide receiver Tyler Boyd, wide receiver Michael Thomas, wide receiver Corey Davis, wide receiver Michael Gallup, DJ Chark at wide receiver, Marquez Valdez-Scantling of the wide receiver room, obviously Hunter Renfrow, Odell Beckham, Logan Thomas, David Bakhtiari, who I imagine will go to the New York Jets after June 1st, DJ Humphreys, Andres Pete, Dalton Risner, those are offensive linemen. Vitae is on the free agent list still. Connor Williams, Lucas Patrick, Brian Allen, Mason Cole. At defensive tackle, you got Calais Campbell, Lawrence Guy at defensive line. At edge, you got Marcus Golden, Bud Dupree, Emmanuel Ogba, Carl Lawson, Yannick Ngakoue, Jerry Hughes, and Tyus Bowser at the edge position. Linebacker, you got Cam Gill. Cornerback, you have five corners that are still available. Stephon Gilmore, Xavier Howard, Steven Nelson, Adoree Jackson, Patrick Peterson. Safety, you also have five available. You have Eddie Jackson, Micah Hyde, Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and Justin Simmons. Now, out of those players, who would you want to get? And for me, I go back to it. I look at one player on the offense. I look at DJ Chark. I look at DJ Chark for one reason only. I know his injury history, but I know that he has a connection with Jared Goff. And I know that I've seen it with my own two eyes that he can come in Detroit and make some plays. And that's what I'm looking for by a guy like DJ Chark to make those plays and be a very critical piece to this offense. And I look at him as a deep threat. And if he could be a guy that you sign late that helps your team win, I think that's a total win. And I also look at maybe edge. You look at Yannick Ngakoue, or maybe you look at a guy like Calais Campbell who can help that defensive line room, which is very young. You know, if you get out of Calais Campbell and DJ Reader, I've added DJ Reader to the locker room, but if you could add a Calais Campbell there, I mean, these young players in our locker room, they're going to look at guys like Calais Campbell, they're going to look at guys like DJ Reed, and they're going to be like, how did they become so good, and what's their work ethic like? That's why it's critical to get some of those guys in there. And, I mean, if you're going to ask me, I like Ngakoue as an edge rusher. I do, I think, but he's not good in the run game. If you're looking for a total package, you look at Jerry Hughes or Carl Lawson. You know, those are two guys on the edge that could help. Maybe you look at a guy like Quandre Diggs or Eddie Jackson as a safety, as a backup safety. those could really help Detroit too as well. But, you know, obviously you're not looking for offensive line. You're not looking – maybe you look at – you know, you just paid Brock Bowers. You paid Brock Wright, which – what a crazy pick that was by the Raiders, by the way. But you paid Brock Wright, so you're not going to go out and get Logan Thomas. Valdez Scantling, no thanks. Maybe a Michael Gallup, maybe a Tyler Boyd. Those are two guys. I've seen people mention Ryan Tannehill as a backup quarterback. That doesn't really make any sense to me. But I'm interested to hear what you guys think. Let me know in the comments on the Detroit Lions News podcast page. You can follow me on Twitter at Detroit Joe Chap. And let me know who you would sign at the free agent positions. Because I feel like the way that Brad Holmes has really came into this offseason, the second part of the offseason after a draft, is he's really built a really foundational group. I think before the draft, you might have said, let's sign Stephon Gilmore or Xavier Howard or Steven Nelson or Adoree Jackson. And the Detroit Lions don't have to sign a cornerback. They got a lot of cornerbacks there. So you're looking at edge. You're looking at wide receiver, the X wide receiver. You didn't get that in the draft. And obviously, you're hoping that you can get a guy like DJ Chark. You're hoping that you can get a guy like, you know, Ngakoue or Carl Lawson or Jerry Hughes or one of those guys that, you know, can help, you know, stabilize that edge rusher role. The Lions are in a good position. You know, after a draft, I think the last couple of years, you know, it's been easier to, you know, think about the draft and you know, that the Detroit Lions aren't really in this position where they need to really force anything. This wasn't the case with, like, the Bob Quinn era, the Martin Mayhew era, the Bob, you know, the Matt Millen era, where you felt like after a draft, you're like, oh, my God, we need so much because I don't really think that, you know, our GM can get the talent to help us this year. And I think with Brad Holmes, it's different. And I think Brad Holmes has done a damn good job at getting the talent that he has got, but building a really good team. And I think that over the next course of the couple months that we're going to be, you know, through off season, June, July, he's got a little bit of flexibility to add some players to the roster that maybe he wouldn't have thought about. And you know, I think going into the draft, a lot of people thought corner was going to be a big, big question mark. I think with them adding two corners in Rakestraw and Arnold, I don't think that they're really forced to that position. I really don't think they need to add a safety because they got Sione Vaki, who could potentially play running back and safety. Like I said earlier, he could take up two roster spots, and it opens up a roster spot for another player because he's only one person. So it's very interesting what Brad Holmes has put himself into. And if you think about it from that perspective, it's a really good draft. And, you know, it's going to be a very, very interesting to see what happens over the next course of, you know, the next 2 months. And, you know, we're going to do some little breakdowns of, you know, the Detroit Lions going forward. But, you know, stay tuned to the Detroit Lions News podcast. We're going to have a couple podcasts. Obviously, we wanted to get this one out. This is breaking down the draft. And when Tyler is able to do the podcast, we'll do another podcast breaking down the draft with his thoughts. And then we'll have the schedule release podcast. We'll have podcasts in between there. But we're just, you know, obviously with the summer, we kind of, you know, there's not much to report on. But we're going to break down some, we'll have some short pods that are easier to, you know, digest. Maybe 20, 30 minutes just during the off season, especially over the June and July months. But thank you for listening to the Detroit Lions News podcast. I'm your host, Joe Chapp, and I will see you on the next podcast as we talk more Lions football. Now, please follow and subscribe to Between the Whistles Detroit. It's going to kind of rebrand into one national. It's going to have some national stuff, but still going to have a lot of Detroit Lions content. So any short content will go on Between the Whistles Detroit. So we will see you in the next podcast as we talk more Detroit Lions news football on the Detroit Lions News podcast.